The Children, Families, and Senior Subcommittee will now come to order. Aaron, not this Aaron, but this Aaron. Aaron, please call the roll and announce the quorum.
Chair Altman.
Here.
Representatives Bartleman.
Here.
Barrero.
Here.
Brannan.
Here.
Costello.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Fisher.
Here.
Haig. Killebrew.
Here.
Coster.
Here.
Roach. Robinson.
Here.
Vice Chair Roth.
Here.
Saroy. Trebulsi.
Here.
Ranking Member Valdez.
Present.
Williams.
Here.
Woodson.
Yeah.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you, Aaron. Report the bill favorably with the committee substitute. Okay. Next item is we're having a little bit of a. While we're doing this, I do want to report that Representative Saroy does have an excused absence. Okay, next bill, 419, Early Learning and Early Grade Success. Representative Grawl, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members, for hearing this bill today. Returning members, I would like to report that this bill is identical to the one that was passed last year off of the House floor. It was passed with 119 yeas and zero nays. So for those of you who think that this looks familiar, it does. Hopefully we'll have the Senate on board this year as we move this policy through in hopes for a stronger early learning system. So HB 419, Early Learning and Early Grade Success. This bill aligns the early learning directly with the K-20 system to ensure the state approaches education from a birth to 20 perspective, which would provide a comprehensive alignment of educational programs beginning from the earliest stages of brain development and learning that supports school readiness and future school success. I've long been involved with the early learning industry and of sorts in childcare just through my work as a as board president for a local nonprofit, and we served 150% to 200% of the poverty level. So the group of individuals and families that we served were not eligible for any state or federal funding, and so we raised all of that money locally in order to support families. It's also, so when I came to Tallahassee, I started working in this policy space and had the opportunity to work with the Committee on Early Grade Success, which was passed in legislation in my first year. And that group was made up of legislators, the Department of Education, OEL, Early Learning Coalitions, providers, parents, and kindergarten teachers. And what you see before you is really the result of that collaborative work and taking all of the stakeholders' perspectives into consideration as we look at how we can provide a stronger early learning system in the state of Florida. The first component that the bill addresses is governance. In order to ensure program administration efficiencies and recognize a comprehensive system of education birth to 20, the bill eliminates the Office of Early Learning and creates a Division of Early Learning to be administered by a Chancellor of Early Learning accountable to the Commissioner of Education and the State Board of Education. The new division would be responsible for the state's birth to five programs, allowing for statewide coordination of activities and initiatives that fully support the continuum of education for Florida's children. The bill also clarifies that the commissioner and DOE are responsible for aligned integration of birth through five in its approach to work and policy by requiring DOE to develop an integrated early learning to 20 information system, submitting a unified budget to the legislature, adding ELCs to oversight jurisdiction of the State Board of Education, and requiring DOE to develop performance standards for coalitions and provide programmatic and fiscal monitoring biennially. The bill also addresses Gold Seal accreditation. The merits of accreditation are supposed to be directly linked, at least partially, to structural quality within an early education provider. Programs that have attained and maintained accreditation should understand the operational, environmental, and educational facets of early education. School readiness providers who have attained accreditation by one of the state's 15 approved accrediting entities receive up to 20% payment differential in addition to the base payment rate for each school readiness child served. The average statewide annual payment differential has been approximately $33 million in school readiness funding. The legislation moves the program, the Gold Seal Accreditation Program, to the Department of Education and sets a minimum differential rate of 20% for all Gold Seal accredited child care providers that serve school readiness children, requires an entity to provide on-site monitoring every 5 years with an annual reporting process that requires risk-based on-site monitoring, dictates that an accrediting body fraudulently accrediting early learning programs or not conducting on-site verification shall be liable for the repayment of any rate differentials paid to providers, and allows providers who have been operating for 5 years or longer and are cited with a Class 1 violation to appeal to the Department, State Board of Education, for a waiver to maintain, bless you, to maintain Gold Seal designation. Currently, their Gold Seal status would be terminated. With regard to VPK accountability, voluntary pre-kindergarten accountability has historically received national criticism. Over the last few years, concerns have escalated with the release of kindergarten readiness rates, and the limited accountability structure cannot adequately determine quality from low quality, high quality from low quality VPK programs in the state of Florida. Currently, the Florida Kindergarten Readiness Screener is administered within 30 days of the child entering kindergarten, therefore limiting a parent's options for interventions at that point. The changes in this bill would bring parity between the state's school readiness and VPK program requirements for contracting and improve the data points used for calculating a VPK provider's readiness rate. It would require DOE to require VPK providers to participate in a program assessment, which is an observational assessment that measures teacher-child interactions, modify VPK readiness rates to a performance metric, which would include a child pre- and post-assessment. This direct assessment would be age-appropriate and feel like a game. Would it also include learning gains and final achievement score and a program assessment? Would no longer use the Florida Kindergarten Readiness Screener in the calculation of readiness rates after 2020-2021. It would calculate results of program assessment, learning gains, and achievement level under a new methodology to generate a performance metric and designation of unsatisfactory, approaching proficient, proficient, highly proficient, or excellent. It would establish a VPK BSA differential methodology of up to 15% for higher performing providers subject to legislative appropriation. It would require development of an enhanced provider profile to display provider information and quality indicators for families to help them make decisions about the VPK provider that they would like to choose for their child. It revises the definition of VPK completer to 85% from 70%. It requires approval of improvement plans submitted by low-performing providers. Plans must include the adoption of approved curricula and staff development. Currently, providers may choose one or the other, and adds an exception in good cause exemptions for providers serving children with special needs. With regard to VPK program improvements, the bill also provides opportunities for program improvements to include requiring 3 courses on emergent literacy. Currently, only 1 is required for all instructors. Requiring DOE to make available at least 8 hours of online training that supports VPK instructors, increasing competency of teacher-child interactions. Requiring additional training for VPK directors on curricula implementation and use of student-level data to inform the delivery of instruction. Changes staff development plan to include training on teacher-child interactions.
Representative Grawl?
Yes.
Let me see. We have the bill here before us. You're doing a really good job of summarizing it. Are there any questions of the sponsor on the committee? Representative Roth.
Thank you, Chair Grawl, for this amazing work. I do have a question, but I want to say first that I'm very heartened that this is exactly the same bill as last year, because I tried to get through it, and it's like, this is like way in the weeds. I mean, it's so detailed. I'm worried that certain providers are going to be able to perform. So I'm glad that you have. So the bottom line question is, this kind of feels like it's going from a voluntary pre-K program to a mandatory pre-K. It's not mandatory, but it's very complicated. This is the trend nationwide, and can you explain kind of like the why? Because you're going from DCF to DOE and all that, so it's a pretty big change.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. The changes are being made. This does not change from a voluntary pre-kindergarten program to a mandatory pre-kindergarten program. Voluntary pre-K has been in existence in the state of Florida for, we're coming up on 2 decades. And there has been little done, there's been some work done in the way of accountability with regard to voluntary pre-K, but it has not given us the results that we would expect. We still have approximately half of VPK completers being ready for kindergarten when they enter kindergarten. So that speaks to the program itself. Is the program working? We spend about $400 million a year in general revenue on the voluntary pre-K program. And therefore, the premise behind this bill is that we need to have some level of accountability. When children are entering school, is voluntary pre-K making a difference for those children in the way of their success? And so what this bill seeks to do is to align the systems. And that's what has been missing, in my point of view. That's what's been missing with regard to accountability in our early child care programs, in VPK, and even in our K-12 system, is the failure to align the systems. So you have portions of what is done, you know, are being done by DCF in terms of the accrediting right now for the Gold Seal providers and for Gold Seal accrediting entities. You have something, you know, the Office of Early Learning works with the Department of Education, but is separate from the Department of Education. And so there's no actual responsibility or requirement, I should say, requirement that everything aligns from when a child may come into a program run by the state as a school readiness child to when a child goes to VPK to when a child goes into public education. And so the purpose of this is really to align the systems so that we have better results for children and families, and so that families are better able to navigate their child's educational experience, because we're not telling them that they have to work with different entities every time their child moves from one program to the next.
Thank you, Chair. Just in general, I was happy to see some of the provisions in the bill that do allow some flexibility and some transition time. Could you speak a little bit? Because this looks like, you know, a big requirement for these providers. You're going from kind of this is the way we're doing it. Now we're ramping up. We got a lot more conditions, a lot more rules. You could be on probation. Could you kind of speak to that part a little bit, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the bill allows right now for an implementation timeline of the first year would be really identifying the Council on Early Grade Success, putting the Council on Early Grade Success together so that all of those stakeholders are involved in the decision-making process as we move forward and can have a direct avenue for input. And that first year also allows for procurement of the tool that would be used for progress monitoring. Right now, one would say that by having children take a kindergarten readiness screener in the first 30 days of kindergarten, that it makes up, and that kindergarten readiness screener makes up 90% of a child's kindergarten readiness score. And so that is very much a high stakes test related back to the provider. And so what this bill does, it allows the provider to benefit from what's happening in their classroom, and what's happening on site, and have real-time information about how their educators are doing in their child care centers. And so there's been a lot of support from the provider community because this seeks to really take into account all of the ways in which they're impacting that child's life, as opposed to a test that's given potentially 5 months after they've left that child care provider's care. And so we've had a lot of support from the provider community because of that. And one more thing, they would, after that year of the tool would be procured, and then there would be one full year of training on the tool and implementation in the classrooms in which there would be no consequences. So that one full year would be a trial period in terms of get and training period for all of the providers, so that the year following, so you were really on a 3-year implementation schedule before we would have real numbers.
Thank you, Representative Woodson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Gall, for bringing this piece of legislation to us. Based on sitting and reading the bills and also a lot of calls that I have gotten from a lot of the various entities as well as the stakeholders regarding this bill. You have put a lot of work into it, and I'm very grateful and thankful due to my knowledge of school readiness and VPK and what's needed to be done in those areas. Would the centralization of the school readiness and VPK program under DOE generate any additional savings? And if it does, do you intend to reinvest this money into school readiness, into VPK as well? Because VPK, the way that it's set like a 3 hours program. And we're seeing how beneficial VPK is when those children leave the program in order to be ready to enter schools. So is that the intent or not?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There hasn't been any analysis done that has shown that there would be a direct savings by moving OEL into DOE because we haven't, the bill doesn't call for a reduction in the staff levels at OEL when we move it over to DOE because right now it would still be realigning those systems and we're not sure yet what those savings may be. I would say that with regard to, you know, providing additional VPK to students, whether or not a child needs a full day VPK, what this bill should do in terms of moving forward is it should allow us to understand which providers are really high quality providers. Because right now, if we have a low performing provider and we allow a child and we pay for a child to go full day as opposed to half day, are we really making any difference in that child's educational experience? So it's my position that if we are going to have the next conversation, which would be about some children potentially needing a full day of VPK, we need to know who our highest performing providers are, and that's where we need to make full day VPK available, is only with the highest performing providers. I don't believe that the state has the appropriate level of data currently on the providers in order to do that in a meaningful way, which will change that child's success.
Yeah, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a timeline as to when, once you do the assessment, as to when you'll be able to judge what's going on and make a decision on how to proceed?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. So a timeline with regard to that specific child and how they performed? What the bill calls for is it calls for information being provided to the families within 7 to 14 days, depending on which assessment, whether it's not the pre or the post. And so within 14 days, a family should know whether or not their child's final achievement in the VPK program puts them ready for kindergarten, makes them, you know, means that they've had the appropriate gains, their final achievement score is such that they know that they will do well in kindergarten. If that child is still showing any type of deficiencies and what would be expected to be learned during that VPK period, a family would have the opportunity to seek other interventions before kindergarten starts. And that's where right now, when you're finding out that a child is not ready for kindergarten, that child's already in kindergarten, there's really, you're providing extra interventions at the school district level, but not necessarily in the summer between when a VPK program ended and the beginning of the kindergarten year. I think that there's a number of our communities that have different programs over the summer, in particular, that a child could participate in if they, in fact, were not, their final achievement score was not adequate at the end of the VPK.
Any other, yes, Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Rep. Grawl, thank you very much for bringing this bill forward again. As I heard you speak in reference to the budgets, you mentioned that this program, the VPK program generates about $400 million is what's allocated. And I see that the bill calls for almost $3.1 million for additional support personnel. My question is, why do we need more from the GR, and why not find ways of being able to absorb the staff allocation within both the DOE and with what the 400 mil, thank you, DCF has?
Thank you. What the bill calls for is actually a reallocation of dollars that are already spent for assessments in this space. So, but we have to authorize that money to be spent on the new assessment versus and the new tool versus the old tool. And so we would no longer have to fund the kindergarten readiness screener. And so it's really about just kind of rearranging some dollars. We do know as well that all of the money for the bill does not have to come from GR. So it's all not all general revenue money, because what this program seeks to do with regard to universal quality in the state of Florida, we are permitted to use CCDF funds from the federal government to implement much of the quality controls that we're talking about in this bill. And so, especially with the influx of CCDF funds over the course of really the last 2 years and moving forward that we can count on, I think that there'll be a very minimal impact to our general revenue, if anything. And then just, but I look at it from the perspective of, you know, if we need $3 million, because the actual implementation costs as you move forward with the progress monitoring tool in, when it moves into kindergarten, when it moves into first grade, second grade, and third grade, there will be an increased cost. But those are current costs that are experienced by the system right now. So it's really about how we allocate those resources. I think that by having an aligned system, we will save in other resources throughout our education system.
Yes, follow up.
Thank you very much. It's just that and don't get me wrong, any investment that we can do early on for our children to do well in school is a great investment. So having said that, in the bill analysis, in the very second to the last, actually the very last paragraph, it says that the bill appropriates $3.88 million in recurring funds from the General Revenue Fund to the DOE to implement the Coordinated Screening and Progress Monitoring Program for the VPK and kindergarten students beginning in the fiscal year 22-23. Then the bill also appropriates $677,759 to implement the VPK program assessment and $100,000 to contract for a review of the school readiness payments rates. So my focus was just on the 3.88.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I look forward to at the end of last session when we were still, I've had conversations with DOE, with appropriations staff over the years regarding these dollars. At the end of last session, I actually went directly to the federal government and asked them our funding questions, whether or not, you know, if we spent the money in this way, we would be able to use the CCDF dollars. So that part of the bill has not been updated. And so I look forward to, between now and the Appropriations Subcommittee, making sure that if we can, in fact, with the information I have now, that I believe we can, in fact, use the federal dollars as opposed to all general revenue dollars, making sure that we have that appropriately aligned in the next bill, in the next stop.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
You. Okay, are there any other questions? Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rugwall, I know you have been working years on this one particular bill, and I appreciate your hard work that you have put into this. The questions that I had at the first stop, I have had several conversations this morning. One of the conversations was with the staff, so I am working with them to make sure that those things are covered. One thing I like that you stated this morning, or this afternoon, was about bridging the gap between early learning and pre-K. Can we go through that again and let me make sure I understand that correctly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So approximately 2 years ago now, we passed HB 1081, I believe it was, that put uses the class tool in our school readiness classrooms, which is a teacher-child observation tool that is used currently within school readiness programs. So in order to, we don't want to add a new tool that doesn't make sense, that the providers haven't been trained on, haven't been working. There's still a lot of value to that tool, even if in a four-year-old classroom. So what this bill does, it is extends the use of that teacher-child interaction assessment that we're currently doing in school readiness. It extends it to the VPK classroom and allows that VPK provider to really, I think, see the rewards of, you know, training their staff on teacher-child interaction and how much of a difference that can make in a child's success. So right now, each VPK classroom does not have to have a class assessment. The class assessment does not factor into their readiness rate. This bill would require the class assessment to factor into their readiness rate, which would give parents a better idea of the environment that they could expect in a school readiness classroom and a VPK classroom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, any other questions? Seeing none, we have no amendments. We're now in open public testimony on the bill. We have a card from Don Stewart, Florida PTA. Florida PTA waves in support, okay. David Souter. I don't see him here, okay. Sarah Sutsky, wave in support. Tony Loop. Earning Learning Coalition of St. Lucie County.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
You might want to lift that mic up there, Tony.
Okay. There we go. Is that better?
Perfect.
All right. Good afternoon. I'm Tony Loop, the CEO of the Early Learning Coalition for St. Lucie County. And I'm also the chair of the Association of Early Learning Coalitions, which is comprised of myself and 30 or 29 of my peers. First of all, I want to thank Representative Grawl for her tenacity and her commitment to early education. We have not seen another representative of her stature and commitment for early learning, and it's so important. And I appreciate all the great questions that were asked of her as well. We are in support of this bill because it does have a coordinated screening and assessment system. So it will take, as Representative Grawl said, it will take where the child is when they come into VPK. So if they're already behind for their age when they come into VPK, the way the system works right now, there's really no measurement for that. So this really helps the provider focus on the measurement and then where the child ends up at the end of the VPK year. Very similar to how you see the grade schools, you know, in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, it's all about if that child is able to move on to the next grade. They don't, when you're in second grade, you don't have an assessment done in third grade to understand if you're ready for third grade. So we really appreciate that. That pre and post really will help with that. Apologize, I haven't figured out how to not get my glasses to fog up. So
not alone.
All right. Yeah, and then when I laugh, it makes it worse. So definitely, you know, the fact that it's using data to identify early delays as well. The sooner we can help a child with delays, the better their chances are to improve. It also will collect that longitudinal data and really track the child and understand the child's development. As far as effective accountability in VPK, it's important to understand that VPK is voluntary for the child, but if a provider is going to offer that, don't we want that provider to be offering the best program that they can for the child? That's really what it's about. So, excuse me, with that class assessment, a large majority of our childcare providers that we're contracted with are involved with a class assessment on the school readiness side. There'd only be a small minority that we would have to give some training to, and Representative Grawl's bill allows for that transition over 3 years. And then also it gives increased accessibility to the families to understand where their child is developmentally, and also for the fact that with information being posted out there on the portal, then they can understand where the provider stands with the program.
I'm going to interrupt you here.
Yep.
Representative Groth has a question.
Yes, sir. Thank you for coming, sir, and you being the chair. I noticed in the bill summary and analysis and all that, there was talk about possible consolidation of early learning centers, and there was also an issue about whether it was 30 or 31. I couldn't figure out what that was what the reason for that was. Could you explain that, please?
Sure. So, sorry, Mr. Chair. There are 30 coalitions and RCMA, which is the Redlands Migrant Christian Association. Thank you. And so with what is in Representative Grawl's bill, it's really about monitoring of early learning coalitions. We are monitored and held accountable as it is right now. With her bill, in regards to a survey from that the parents and program participants would be involved in, it's about understanding where the coalitions are and their accessibility and how they work with the parents. But with regards to a merger, this bill does not automatically create a merger situation. We have, over the years, I think 54 coalitions that covered the 67 counties. And over time, mergers had happened, whether it was naturally or with legislation, you know, that came into play. So this bill does not force any mergers. It's really about if a coalition is not performing, they would be put on a corrective action. And then potentially if there's continued poor performance, then the possibility of a merger. Am I correct? Okay.
Got you. any other questions? Yes, Representative Williams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When you spoke about the assessment, you said when a child comes in, they don't know if they're behind at that point. Do they not do pre-test or post-test before at the beginning of the year?
There is a pre and a post currently, but those are for informational type purposes. There's no, the provider themselves would not get any credit for the gains that the child has made over the year. So if the child was below their age appropriate stature where they should be, and they made exponential gains, but they're still not ready for kindergarten, the provider would ultimately get a poor score because the child wasn't ready for kindergarten, but there was nothing taking into account that they had helped that child make huge gains over the program year.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
But once a child entered the program at that point, once they do the test, you will know if that child is behind at the beginning of the year. So that's when the assessment would actually take place.
Yes, there is a pre and a post currently. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a quick question. Now, you're representing the early coalition of St. Lucie County. You're not representing any other of the coalitions.
I'm speaking on behalf of our association, which comprises all 30 coalitions.
Did they vote on the bill? Did they take an official position?
Our official position is what I shared with you, that we're in support of the areas that I spoke of.
How about the bill as a whole? Was there action taken? Mm-hmm. Was that unanimous?
So there are some areas that we have some concern about, but there's not anything, it's not necessarily our fight to fight. Some concerns that we have would be with the Office of Early Learning assimilating to the Department of Education.
Yeah.
We're unsure of how that will be because the Department of Education is very K-12 focused.
Okay, great. That's good. I'm sure Rep. Grawl, it's a very good point. She can address that too. I think I'm glad you brought that out. Okay. We have some waiving supports. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Alejandro Gonzalez, waves in support. Michael Barrett, waves in support. Okay. Alejandro represents United Way of Broward County. Michael Barrett represents the Florida Coalition of Catholic Bishops, waves in support. And Matthew Choi, Florida Chamber of Commerce, they wave in support. Okay. All right, now, is there any debate on the bill? Do we have any debate? Oh, yes.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to say that I am in support of this program, and I want to just highlight what you've done that's amazing. Number one, VPK is basically a scholarship voucher program. Children and parents, they get to select whatever private provider they want to use that voucher. But the issue you're addressing here is that we know that VPK tax dollars are going to providers who are not always providing the highest quality education. And so those children are not getting the best services. And what lacks is the ability for us to see, like you said, who's having the greatest impact on a child's education. So what your bill actually does is it's going to find out there's going to be, as you stated, a check and balance system. We're going to find out who the highest quality providers are. They're going to be listed in a portal so that when parents make the choice, they're making the wisest choice. And I think the reason why it's supported by the business community and everyone out there is because when we're talking about tax dollars on a child's education, there has to be some sort of accountability and quality control. And everyone wants an educated workforce, and this is the foundation of the child's learning. So I am definitely supporting this, and I hope that you will look to other programs that exist in Florida to apply the same kind of accountability measures to make sure that every child gets the best, because you've done an amazing job with this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other debate? Representative Roth. But before Representative Roth, I did want to make a comment. It isn't a voucher as related traditional voucher, because it's free to everyone. Whereas in the voucher system, certain people give it. But this is open and free. It's provided for us. I just want to clarify.
It's the same concept.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit different. This is a free opportunity. Okay, Representative Roth?
I just wanted to make one quick comment in support of the bill. This is a very simple concept. I actually have three grandchildren, and so I'm watching how they're, you know, entering school and doing with their reading program, and it's really so critical today that a child does not fall behind and actually see reading as a problem. Like, oh no, I don't want to read because I'm not very good at it. And the earlier we get them started, we all know this, but it's just so critical. And I'm just so thankful for this legislation, because we've got to move the ball forward, and this bill does that. Thank you.
Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much. This, to me, feels like a deja vu. I just hope we just get across the line in both sides so that then we can get it to the governor and get it signed.
Representative Robinson?
Yes, I just wanted to say, as a K-12 educator, this is long overdue, and I truly appreciate the time and effort you've put in this, because this accountability is definitely, definitely needed. It's going to be great.
Representative Woodson?
I don't want to be redundant, but I just would not let this opportunity pass without telling you what a great job that you have done sticking to this bill. And I have to say, David Lawrence in Dade County, who is a big supporter of early learning, wanted to make sure that I said to you, great job. So I appreciate your work on it, and I hope we can continue to work, because early learning, early childhood, school readiness, VPK, is key to a child's success. It's like a house that you're building. So thank you so much.
Okay, I think that closed the debate. You know, my wife teaches kindergarten, and I was here when we went to VPK, and one thing that an immediate effect on our family, my wife used to come home after the first day of kindergarten with bruises all over her. It's amazing how this has helped prepare kids for kindergarten. So we appreciate that. Representative Grawl, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee, for the conversation and what sounds like support. And I would mention just a couple things about the debate. DOE has traditionally been fairly K-12 focused, but let's remember that the state university system is within DOE. They are in charge of higher education. This bill changes the way that we look at education in Florida by setting a birth to 20 system. Because not all children will need to use the resources of school readiness or of VPK. But for those that do, it should align with our K-12 system and then ultimately with our university system. And that's really what this bill seeks to do. And I've heard, I didn't make it through about three more pages of my opening. The chair saved you from it.
Yeah, that's probably was in it.
Okay. It's a 180-page bill, so it's substantial. And what it does is substantial. But and so we hear criticisms of the bill, I do, of, well, it's a big bill. Do we need to do it all? Well, the problem is, as somebody who's been here for 5 years, is that when we don't take a comprehensive look at a system and make all of the changes that need to be made in order to put us on the path for the greatest level of success, we take pieces of something and then we expect there to be great results. And that just doesn't work. We end up a decade later wondering why something is still not working, but we didn't do the work that we needed to at the beginning to make the hard changes to align the systems. And so I would say that without all of the components of this bill, we end up maintaining the status quo. And as many of you have said, early success for our littlest learners equals long-term success for each of them, for our families, and for our state. And with that, I'd ask for your favorable support.
And I'm going to deviate just a bit, because I had the same concern of moving under the Department of Education, making that shift. Would it become a part of that bureaucracy? And I know, Representative Grawl, you've committed to not happening. Maybe you can share with us how you think that will take place.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that, so the bill calls for a chancellor of early learning. We want to make, I have not put all of the work into this policy area to have early learning kind of dwindle to the back of everyone's memory in the bureaucracy of the Department of Education. But right now, I mean, let's face it, every agency or entity within the government is part of a bureaucracy. So it's our job to streamline the bureaucracy sometimes. And so by having a chancellor of early learning, there is still a very public face of an expert who will be ensure that the state focuses appropriate resources and energy in that space, and that there's somebody with a voice to help align in addition to the Council on Early Grade Success. And I think that the council is a critical component. It does not sunset, because there needs to be a group of stakeholders that continues to hold the system accountable when the legislature is not able to, accountable to what the product of the bill would be when we're not in session, and just to make sure that we're seeing the outcomes that we expect.
Very good. Very good. So, Aaron, would you call the roll?
Representatives Bartleman?
Absolutely. Favorite.
Barrera?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Haig? Killebrew?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
17 yeas and 0 nays, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, members, by your vote, we will show House Bill 419 reported favorably. Okay, next bill is House Bill 1287, Child Care Facility Transportation, sponsored by Representative Diamond, but today Representative Jenny will be presenting the bill on behalf of Representative Diamond. Representative Jenny, you're recognized.
Thank you so much, Chair Altman. Thank you, Vice Chair Roth, Ranking Member Valdez, and the rest of the committee. Representative Diamond does send his best wishes. He has a personal emergency that he has to attend to immediately. He is doing fine. Do not worry about Ben. He's doing A-OK. He wanted me to let you know that. So I am here as a co-sponsor of this bill, and it is HB 1287 creates the Child Safety Alarm Act. The bill would require that vehicles used by child care facilities to transport children must be equipped with an approved alarm system. The alarm would notify the driver to inspect the vehicle to ensure that no children remain in the vehicle. Florida, unfortunately, has the second highest number in the nation of children suffering from vehicular heat stroke resulting in a fatality over the last 20 or so years. That information can also be found in your bill analysis done by the wonderful staff of this committee. Unfortunately, there were four tragic but ultimately avoidable deaths in Florida in 2019 alone. To be preemptive, you should know that DCF currently estimates the cost of the device and the installation to be somewhere between $200 and $600. School districts in many parts of the state have already installed these alarms in their school buses, and this would seek to expand them to the types of organizations we just discussed. I know there is also a amendment, Mr. Chair.
Yes, there is one amendment. Vice Chair Roth, you're recognized to present amendment. Barcode 643533.
Yes, sir, Chair. Can I ask a question of the co-sponsor before I submit the bill?
Sure.
Representative Jenny, I had talked several times today with Representative Diamond. Consider him to be doing a great job on this bill. But I was curious, you know, how long this type of a program has been going on in the United States. He said there were like four or five states that had already implemented this program, but I didn't get a date or an approximate date how long this program has been in existence anywhere in the United States.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, Mr. Chair, I do not have a specific answer, but I do know one thing, and I know you know as well, that, what great staff you have. If we look, technology-based prevention on page 3 of the staff analysis, the auto industry, and I quote from the good work of the staff here, the auto industry has attempted to address child heat stroke deaths in vehicles for years. At the 2002 New York Auto Show, General Motors unveiled a system that would be able to detect the heartbeat of a child left in a car and then measure that. So it's been going on for quite some time, and there have been consumer reports just last year made mention that there are a number of reminder systems in place through different places. But as far as this push to get them into individual entities and organizations, that I do not know, but the technology has been coming along over the course of the last 20 years.
Okay, and I'm sorry, we should have gone to questions right after the presentation. Are there any other questions of the presenter of the bill? Okay, seeing that, is that a question, Representative Williams?
Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, sir. I didn't get the text that Rep. Diamond was not going to be present, so I've been texting back and forth earlier today trying to get, you know, questions answered. One of the questions I have for it, will the installment fee of $130 to $156 or $100 to $450, how would those companies be chosen? And is there something that we will put in writing for those companies that will not allow them to charge more than that amount?
Mr. Chair, I do not, from my understanding of the bill, having read it a few times now at this point, the bill does not contemplate that particular aspect of cost or what it may be and anything that needs to be contractual. And under a normal circumstance, if this was my bill, I would be able to respond to you right now. But unfortunately, I do not want to author another representative's bill for them. But what I left off, I started and I didn't mention it when Vice Chair Roth had that question earlier. I know you know as well, and he and I both know this. Representative Diamond is one of the most conscientious members we have in this body, period, the end. One of the most conscientious members I've ever served with. And I know if you have any concerns, he will do everything in his power to address them. I don't want that to be a cop-out. I know on some level it is. But I would just ask that you know, we always say trust this process, and I would add another layer to that I know will be easy for everyone on this committee, and that's trust that Ben Diamond is going to hear you, and I think I'll be able to show and prove that momentarily as well, that he is willing to work on this with anyone that has questions, and I apologize for not having the specific answer for you, Rep. Williams.
Mr. Chair, that's why I said yes and no, because I know okay. He's that type of
fellow. All right. Okay. Yes. Representative Kilburg.
Thank you, Chair. Is there any funds for the private companies and stuff to, or grants or things that they, you know, we're going to pass this and put this obligation on them? I would hope there'd be some way to have some funds available to help some of the groups.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do not know of any offhand, but given the amount of the growth of grants in private funds coming in, I would be surprised if there were not. I agree with you. The cost should be taken into consideration, which I think was the root of that question, simply because these are right now we're in the middle of pandemic. Charitable giving is down. You know, we're getting back as quickly as we can. But we need to be conscientious of that fact. I do not know the answer. And again, I sincerely apologize for not having that answer for you. But I would hope so. And I wish I had a better answer for you, my friend. I do not at this moment. But I will make sure, like I said, I would stake my reputation on Ben Diamond's reputation when it comes to being conscientious of the concerns of the body. So I'm sure, I know for a fact he's listening to us right now via, I was notified via text earlier, but he will, I'm sure, reach out to you immediately to address that.
Seeing no other questions, let's move now to the amendment. Vice Chair Roth, you're recognized to present Amendment Barcode 643533.
Okay, the amendment says remove line 33 and insert, and this, by way, is changing the date which they must implement. It's changing it from January 1st of 2022 to January 1st of 2023. Explanation, talking with Representative Diamond, I too have concerns, but about the cost and the ability for technology to actually lower the cost. So I felt like it was a reasonable move forward on my part to be in support of this bill. If we could give technology a little bit more time, give the providers that are driving, you know, because I don't know how many providers there are that transport early, you know, young children, you know, below 2 years of age, because I believe a four-year-old would not let you leave them in the vehicle, truthfully. So my concern is to go ahead and pass this legislation out of committee today with this amendment that would give everybody more time to do the research. I think it might be as simple as a portable device that is able to do the job. That way you're not having to, more than half of the cost, according to the figures, is installation cost. And if you could do a portable device, then the cost would be much, much lower. So with that, I ask your support on this amendment.
Okay, are there any questions? Yes, Representative Valdez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Jenny, do you know if this is a friendly amendment?
It is most certainly friendly, and I will actually quote from a text 1 minute before this meeting starts. I'm okay with Vice Chair Roth's amendment, and that comes directly from Representative Diamond. It is good to go in the sponsor's eyes.
Any other questions? I have a clarification. So the implementation date of the bill, the law would be without the amendment, and what does the amendment change it to?
Yes, sir. The bill currently on line 33 says by January 1st, 2022, and the amendment would take it to January 1st, 2023. So this would be 12 months.
Okay. Is there any debate? Yes, Representative Valdez.
Just one more question. Vice Chair Roth, The cost for me is not much of an issue when you consider that you have babies sometimes left in a car that, unlike a four-year-old, can say, hey, where are you going? Or, you know, pout and say, you know, and clear that attention. So I hope that we're not hung up so much on the cost of what this device might be, because at the end of the day, the cost of losing a child is way more expensive than to putting in a device in a vehicle.
Okay, is there any more debate on that? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To follow up on what Rep. Roth just mentioned, there has been some incident where a four-year-old is left in the car because they were sleeping. So, yes, it's possible that a four-year-old can be left in the car. I just want to make sure that I pointed that out. But besides that, I want to say, even though we have some cost issues associated with the installation of the alarm, I think it's a very, very good bill, because nothing is too expensive for the life of a child. And we have seen it in my county where a kid was left in the car, and he was older than 2 years old, left in the car, and unfortunately, that child passed. So this bill is great. It would put some measures in place in order for our children to benefit from such an alarm system. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, I know. We're not on debate. We're not even on debate on the amendment. We're on questions, just questions of the amendment. I thought you were on debate. Sorry. That's okay. There'll be time. Any other questions for the sponsor of the amendment? Okay. I don't see any other questions. Okay, now we're on debate. Any further debate? I say further debate because we, yes. Okay, there's no, yes. Representative Trubelsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to just echo the sentiments of the colleagues here that I think the price for this device is very nominal in regards to saving a child's life. I have four grandchildren, and one is almost close to four, and I can tell you when they are zonked out after a day of, you know, having fun on a field trip or wherever they may be, there's no waking them up. So they're happy to get up in the middle of the night when you're not ready, but they'll sleep when they want to, and I think anything that we can do as a protection device is well-served, and I think this is a great bill.
Okay. I have a short debate. I will vote against the amendment. I just personally feel 1 year is too long. I was okay with the implementation at the beginning of the year, but I think taking that out for an entire year is a little concerning. God forbid a child die within that year that we've waited. So I will be voting against the amendment. And there's no public testimony on the amendment. Okay, Representative Roth, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Thank you, Chair. I too agree that the cost is not the primary factor here. I think the question is on how do we implement this, how do we move forward, and how do we protect our children? And I know this sounds like a dollar debate, but it's to me it's more of a practicality. I was a little bit disappointed that I couldn't get some of the answers to the questions I was asking. You know, how many child care providers do we have? How long has the program been in existence in other states? And therefore, you know, how easy or hard is this going to be to do this? I will make the argument, and it's from prior experience, that I think the installation cost is high. And so I would like to, the purpose of the amendment is to give providers a little bit more time for the technology to catch up and for them to find a cost-effective way of doing this. I think passing this legislation and sending the message is a good idea, and that's why I offered the amendment to move the bill forward in a way that does both. So I'll ask for your favorable support. Thank you.
Okay, having closed on as amendment. Can Aaron please call the roll on the amendment?
Chair Altman?
No.
Representatives Bartleman?
No.
Barrero?
Respectfully, no.
Brannon?
No.
Casello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
No.
Fisher?
No.
Haig? Killebrew?
Yes.
Koster?
No.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
No.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy?
No.
Trabulsi?
No.
Valdez?
No.
Williams?
No.
Woodson?
No.
4 yeas and 13 nays, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Aaron. And with your vote, show that the amendment fails. Okay, we'll move on to the bill. There's no public testimony on the bill. So, member, next we'll go to debate on the bill. Any debate? Seeing no debate. Oh, yes, Representative Woodson.
In debate. Thank you, Mr.
Williams,
Chair.
Representative Williams, I'm sorry.
I want to say Williams. Thank you, Rep. Diamond, for bringing this great bill. My first year here as a state representative, I ran the same bill. The last toddler that passed away in Broward County was in my district, and it was in 2019. So this is very personal for me. When we are state legislative, we make hard decisions, and I know it may be an impact on some of the child care centers that's not able to afford it at this particular time, but I think the date of 2022 is a big step for us. As one of the representatives stated, if a child passed between now and that time of getting these devices in their vehicles, it's on us. So as we make these hard decisions, I want to say I support it 100% of each and every vehicle that's transporting a child have these alarm devices placed in them. As a state representative, as an early childhood educator, as a preschool owner prior to, I understand how easy it is to leave a child in a vehicle. You're supposed to check and double check and check again. But when you are a child care facility, you are the director, you're the plumber, you're the teacher, you're the police officer, you're the accountant, you do all these things. And a lot of times you forget to check and double check. So hopefully this will be an additional check to save a child life. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Williams. Okay, I don't see any other hands. Nope. Oh, we do. Representative Trabulsi and then Ranking Member Valdez.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair, and again, thank you for this great bill and representing it for Representative Diamond. I just did the math, so not that we want to make this a math equation for any life whatsoever, but the DCF reported approximately 1,566 child care providers currently offer transportation service. So let's just assume all of those providers have one vehicle. If you do the math at $600 per at the high end, that's under $1 million for each vehicle. I mean, for all those 1,566 vehicles to be equipped with the safety monitoring device, which is, I'm sure, far less than litigation would be for one child as a lost death. So again, I will support this bill.
Ranking Member Valdez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Jennings, thank you for pitch hitting for Representative Diamond and hitting a home run at that, in my opinion. I believe that this bill is an excellent bill. As our colleague, Representative Trabulsi, mentioned, there are, and staff, thank you so much for the great work you always do on the staff analysis, is because you reported in that particular bill that 1,566 child care providers do provide transportation, and this is a great bill to be able to help protect these children under the auspices of the care of these providers. So thank you again, and I'm up on this bill.
Representative Bartleman.
I just wanted to point, I know we're worried about the small child care providers, but I know in my county, we, the Children's Services Council, after we had a couple of deaths in the back of the vans, we actually helped fund, assist the private providers in purchasing the alarms. We thought that was just that important to do. So it is something that I think these small child care providers can get assistance through Children's Services Councils and other nonprofits, United Way. I think we all know how vital this is to saving lives, so that they're, hopefully they'll be able to find those funding streams, those that are most in need.
Okay. I see no other debate. I you know, necessity is the mother of invention. I hope that this bill creates a market for these devices. I think the technology that you see now is just the beginning. I know four other states are already doing this, but I think it will create a market, and with that will create a lot of entrepreneurial spirit, and I think they'll only get better and better and hopefully less and less expensive. So I think it's a good beginning. All right, Aaron, would you... Oh, you're recognized at close.
Oh, wave close.
Okay, good. Aaron recognizes the call of the roll.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Guerrero?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Casello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Haig? Killebrew?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Absolutely.
Saroy?
Yes.
Trevolsi?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
17 yeas and zero nays, Mr. Chairman.
Members, by your vote, we'll show House Bill 1287 reported favorably.
Thank you. And Representative Diamond sends his thanks.
Okay, next bill is House Bill 897, Strong Families Tax Credit. Representative Koster, you're recognized to explain House Bill 897.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Chapter 39, Florida Statutes, creates the child welfare system within the Department of Children and Families. The system includes a central abuse hotline, child protective investigations, in-home services and out-of-home placements, and legal services. DCF contracts for case management, out-of-home services, and related services with community-based care lead agencies. DCF is responsible for program oversight and the overall performance of the child welfare system. Florida imposes select taxes on certain businesses and products within the state to generate revenue. This bill creates Section 402.60 Florida Statutes, known as the Strong Families Tax Credit. This tax credit program provides tax credits for businesses that make monetary contributions to certain eligible charitable organizations that provide services focused on child welfare and well-being. The tax credit's modeled after the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program that's already in existence. The eligible charitable organizations are community and faith-based organizations that provide innovative, creative models, empowering families to take a proactive approach to stabilizing their families. The tax credit options reflect an attempt to give a variety of business interests the opportunity to contribute directly to prevention and education programs and reduce our families' dependence on government programs. The intent of the bill is to strengthen families and to focus tax credits on programs and services that will save money for the state by preventing children from entering into the child welfare system, assisting fathers in improving parenting skills, helping them better engage with their children, increasing reading skills and improving educational outcomes, assisting families that have children with chronic illnesses or disabilities, and providing workforce development services for families to increase their independence and reduce their dependence on government. The tax credits will be dollar-for-dollar credits against certain tax liabilities that can be taken against business liability for several state taxes, including corporate income tax, insurance premium tax, severance tax on oil and gas production, alcoholic beverage tax on beer, wine, spirits, or self-accrued sales tax liability of direct pay permit holders. The bill specifies certain requirements and procedures for and limitations on receiving the tax credits. The bill directs Florida Institute for Child Welfare, an entity that performs research on child welfare initiatives contributing to a more effective child welfare system, to perform an analysis of the tax credit and the use of the funds and submit a report to the governor, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and President of the Senate by October 31st of 2025. The bill caps the tax credit at $5 million annually and appropriates $208,000 in non-recurring general revenue funds to the Department of Revenue to implement the bill. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Staff just handed me a note. We have about 50 minutes. We have a very long, important committee bill that we have to get out today. Representative Koster, you wouldn't mind waiting, would you, and let us do the committee bill and we can follow up to yours?
Sure.
Okay, let's do that. I hope we can get to it, but we can't afford to have the committee bill go.
Okay.
All right. Oh, wait. Representative Roth, this is your first bill, isn't it?
It is not, Mr. Chair.
It's the first bill here, though.
It is the first bill before your
committee. Well, let's get her first bill passed, but we do have a long committee bill going and we're running a little behind, so let's do it as quickly as we can.
I'm happy to waive questions.
Okay. Do we have any questions of the bill? Yes, Representative Valdez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. A couple things. On lines item of 328 and 333 on page 14 of your bill, it talks about conducting background screenings on all volunteers and staff working directly with the children in any program funded under the section. The background screening shall use level 2 screening standards pursuant to statute 435.04. The Department of Children and Families shall specify requirements for background screening in rule. Does that mean who's doing the background checks? Are we allowing the fox to guard the hen house?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good question. So actually, the lines that you just cited are actually the subject of an amendment that has been filed. So I don't know if you want me to address that in the amendment, Mr. Chair, but...
Let's address that in the amendment, and we'll finish up the questions, okay. And then we'll have you
I've got
present
another
the
question.
Amendment. Yes.
Okay. And does your bill require that the revenue to go to areas where of the state that are of most need?
The bill does not. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Thank you. The bill does not specify which areas will receive the tax credit. It is a first come, first serve basis. So whichever businesses intend to donate to the eligible charitable contributions, they apply to the Department of Revenue, and whichever businesses apply for the tax credit first will receive the tax credit as long as they're eligible entities. And then the Department of Revenue oversees that process to make sure that the $5 million cap is not exceeded.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no other credits, amendments, let's go to the, there's no other questions, let's go to the amendment as quick as we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is amendment barcode 022257. As written, the charitable, as the bills are originally written, eligible charitable organizations are unable to actually conduct level 2 background screenings because they're not considered authorized governmental agencies. So the FDLE has proposed this amendment, and they have a program, the Volunteer and Employee Criminal History System, otherwise known as VECS. And VECS will allow certain non-governmental organizations to do their own background screenings. So the amendment would just clears up the language to allow for the charitable organizations that are approved by the Department of Children and Families, DCF, for those organizations to apply to the VECS, the FDLE VECS system to run their own background screenings.
Are there any questions on the amendment? Okay. Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there any debate on the amendment? I don't think there's any public testimony on the amendment. Okay, seeing no debate on the amendment, you may close on your amendment.
I'll waive close, Chair.
Okay. Is there any opposition on the amendment? Yes, Representative Williams.
Opposition, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
It seems that we are allowing as State Representative Valdez stated, the hen to watch the chicken coop. It doesn't seem that we have the proper person in place to make sure that we don't have any problems outside of, if I'm able to do my own fingerprinting, I'm able to watch my own home. That means something can slip through the crack. I would feel a lot better if it was outside someone else doing their fingerprinting.
Okay. I'm going to break procedure here. I'm kind of get back to questions because I know, Representative Valdez, you had that question. Did this amendment resolve your concerns? I at least want to give the sponsor of the amendment the opportunity to respond to that.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What concerns me is certain groups. So I don't know what certain groups mean. Either FDLE is going to conduct it all, but when we say certain groups, that's so vague for me.
Okay.
Let me answer, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So the only groups, the only organizations that will be applying to FDLE VEX system to run background checks are those entities that have already been approved by the department as eligible charitable organizations under the bill. So the first step is that the department has to find that the organization is an eligible organization under the bill. There's criteria in the bill that would make them eligible. Once they're eligible, then they can apply to FDLE VEX system to run their background checks. And the background checks run, through different, they run lots of different searches. It's under the National Child Protection Act. That's what this VEX system is designed to include, those background checks. So it's, when I say certain organizations, I mean the organizations that have already been deemed eligible by the department.
Clarification, sir?
Yes.
So are you saying that I'm trying to figure what the process would be in my head? I'm a charitable organization. I want to participate. When do I apply? How do I get accepted and get on that list so that then afterwards FDLE can come and check me out?
Sure. So first, you would have the Department of Children and Families has to, you would apply to the Department of Children and Families to be deemed an eligible charitable organization. In order to be an eligible charitable organization, if you look at, and I can read it, but for the sake of time, I'll just refer you to the page and line numbers. If you starting at the bottom of page 11 of the bill, starting at lines 272, it references what a charitable organization needs to do in order to be deemed eligible by the department. And then if you look to page 12, subparagraphs 2 and 3, A through E, also refer to what the organization has to do to be an eligible organization.
Okay. Then the FDLE does a background check.
Then that organization, once deemed eligible by the department, then can apply to FDLE VEX system to be able to run their background check.
And they must do that.
They must do that in order for the business that's contributing or donating to get their tax credit, they must run their background checks.
Let's fall back on debate then on the amendment. I think yes.
You just have a question, which I thank you because I spoke to you kind of about this right here. So now my question is, you saying that FDLE is going to do the background check, or is the organization going to do the background check? Because my understanding was that the organization will end up doing the background check, which was my question, because it's kind of different from things that have ever been done. Usually FDLE does the background check. So which is it?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The organization is running the background check through FDLE's VEX system. So, and I apologize if I'm not answering these questions clearly enough, and potentially I need to familiarize myself more with the FDLE system. But my understanding is the organization will run it themselves, but they run it through FDLE's VEX program. So it is still, there is still an FDLE oversight, but they have to go through this VEX system because they are not a governmental agency.
Yes.
And but that is that kind of something that's new, because in my experience, usually FDLE usually runs their own think. So I'm just, that was the confusion for me.
Okay.
May I answer that?
You may respond, yes.
I don't believe it's new. I think that what our general understanding of FDLE running background checks probably includes this same process and procedure. And quite frankly, I was not familiar with the VEX system before running this bill. So I think our understanding of FDLE running background checks is probably this same process and procedure. And the purpose of the amendment was to make sure that these charitable organizations can utilize the same process and procedure that other charitable organizations that run background checks have been utilizing all along. We just didn't understand the distinction. At least I didn't understand the distinction.
Okay. Any other questions? And, okay. You're recognized to close on the amendment.
I will again waive close, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Aaron, please, let's do a roll call on this amendment as well.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Ferrero?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Roth?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
No.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
16 yeas and one nay, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and by your vote, show there, that the amendment passes, and there was no public input requested on the amendment as well. Okay, we're back on the bill as amended, and we do have some public comment. Any questions on the bill as amended? And so we now have some public comment cards on the bill as amended. Megan Ross with Better Together US.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I will keep it really brief. I am.
And you might want to talk closer into that mic. It's,
sorry.
Okay, good. That's okay.
I'm a mom with three kids, 5, 3, and 1. This pandemic has been stressful. I am married. I have an education. I am fortunate to have a support system. But a lot of Floridian families are really struggling in social isolation and in silence. This, my organization, Better Together, we come alongside families. We have volunteer helpers and families that voluntarily seek help. It's voluntary for the parents that are receiving the help and voluntary for those helpers. We use the VEX system. We submit the person's information. In FDLE, they do the background check. And if it's not qualified or if there's anything that is concerning, then we don't use the volunteer. And that's the importance of the VEX system for our organization, because child safety is our number one priority. We would be one of the potential organizations that could benefit from the tax credit. What's really great about this program is it helps keep kids out of foster care. We have an MOU with the Department of Children and Families. We've been a partner since 2015. They introduce us families that are at risk but do not have to go into the government system. So these are families that might be homeless. They have environmental hazards. They are facing a medical emergency. I have people that I can call in times of crisis, but a lot of our families that we work with, they do not have good options. They do not have people that they can call in times of need. This gives them a safe and a better option. And what's great is, since it's not connected to government, parents trust us that they're not going to lose their children. They ask questions. It's voluntary. They get to know the families that are helping them. And as a result, we've been able to keep over 3,000 kids out of the foster care system with a 98% success rate that is measured against the state. And so it's working. And so we are growing our program in Florida to areas that DCF has determined a high level of need, where they need innovative, creative solutions to come alongside families and help them before the state gets involved. And the other great thing, for every child that we're keeping out of the foster care system, that means, one, we as a community, we didn't fail these kids. We kept them safe. And two, it's saving taxpayers a lot of money.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. Amanda Prater? Amanda Prater with Opportunity Solutions Project waves in support. David Serter.
My honor to be in front of the representatives. Chair, thank you for your time. David Serter from Fruitland Park, Florida, that speaks at school board meetings in Lake County. I used to work at Leesburg High School. My dad was a principal. I had the best job I ever had. I'm a certified commercial cleaner. I should have listened to my dad and been a teacher, like my older sister is. But children, I worry about. I only got one son. He's 38 now. He's a valedictorian of his high school. He does pick lines, and he's a card player. A very good card player. He goes to Vegas. And he don't call me. That's okay. I'm worried about society. I don't drink. And these associations that get the tax credit, this works. You know, United Way in Lake and Sutton County, I talked to the director herself, but by God, when I call back, I get a no trespassing at that facility because I could use the help of getting utilities. You know, I sleep in my car when I get around here. And I speak at a lot, well, Brevard County School Board. I've got one of their Flagler County pins of school boards. I've, Sutton County, I've public commented there twice. My dad taught me respect and values. Our kids are the most important asset the families have. You know, I've been divorced. Well, I get along with my ex-wife better than my son. He acts like her. But, you know, a lot of people go through divorces. I know a gentleman that his wife ran out of him. She's a druggie. He adopted three of her kids. He's got a little girl, well, five girls, three boys, from approximately 12 to 2 years old. And they go to a church, a friend of mine. I go to a lot of churches. I am doing the Martin Luther King thing. I'm so honored to be in front of many representatives and senators, well, cities, counties. I got Mayor Buddy Dyer's pin. I've got Jerry Dovey's pin, Flagler County pin. Sutton County wants to make a pin. I was just in St. John's. I thank you very much for your time. I believe in this bill.
I was about to say, you support the bill. Thank you. And thank you for your input. Appreciate it. Awesome. Okay, Aaron, well, you're recognized. Close on your. Is there any debate on the bill? Yes, Representative Valdez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for the amendment of trying to put back the FDLE in this. At least that's a positive step in it. But, you know, I feel that this is incredibly an efficient way to spend our state revenue dollars. It allows insurance companies, fossil fuel producers, alcohol manufacturers and distributors, car dealerships, and other corporations to decide on a first-come, first-served basis which organizations working on a child welfare issue should receive a $5 million or part of that state general revenue. Under this bill, I don't see anything requiring this revenue to go to areas of the state most needed of this funding. Nothing to ensure that organizations receiving it deliver services effectively or evidence-based manner, and nothing to prevent the funding from going to organizations that may discriminate against certain individuals or families. Rather than allowing these businesses to randomly determine how the state allocates the $5 million, why not create a grant program that DCF could operate in conjunction with the Florida Institute for Child Welfare and be able to continue to help organizations that came before us do the great work that they're doing with our kids, because they are the experts who work with these issues and allocate funding to organizations who use these evidence-based practices and have demonstrated quality outcomes and who also operate in the areas of the state that is needed the funding the most. Every year, we talk about these things and how what would be the best way to have these funds distributed on a predictable multi-year basis, which would allow qualified organizations to plan for the funding and design or sustain effective programs. Instead of such an idea, this bill just allowed businesses to randomly throw $5 million a year at organizations, and 3 years later, the FICW will submit a report on the effectiveness of that $15 million state spending. That concerns me, especially in a time, in a budget year that we are in now and in the future. It's critical to realize that this bill does not create new or extra funding for these services, and that is very concerning to me, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Any other debate on the bill? Okay, seeing no other debate, Representative, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perfection is the death of progress. While we may not have the perfect solution, our children and families deserve progress. Our children are one of our most vulnerable populations, and our children in the welfare system are even more vulnerable. I don't profess to have all the answers or all the solutions, but what I do know is that we can't rely solely on the government to fix the problems in our child welfare system. We need more than just more government regulation to make the needed progress. Like Better Together, that you just heard from, let's incentivize our businesses, let's incentivize our communities and our faith-based organizations that rally around our families in their darkest times, the organizations that empower our families, the organizations that work to proactively stabilize our families. Let's empower them. And with that, I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Will you please call the roll on House Bill 897?
Representatives Bartleman?
No.
Barrero?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Trabulsi?
Yes.
Valdez?
No.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
No.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
14 yeas and 3 nays, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Aaron. Members, by your vote, show the bill will be reported favorably as amended. Okay, I will now pass the gavel to Chair Roth.
Thank you, Chair Altman, and I only hope that I could continue this meeting in the same manner you do, with a little bit of humor every once in a while too, sir. So, Chairman Altman, you are recognized to explain PCB CFS 21-01.
Thank you, Chair Roth. And the way I've been doing today, I don't think that will be hard to do. I've been spending all my time working on this committee bill. And as you know, we've workshopped this bill, and we've had quite a bit of discussion in numerous meetings in relation to our child welfare system. A little bit of history here. 20 years ago, the state outsourced the coordination and management of child welfare. The child welfare outsourced them to the child welfare services located in a community. They sent those to, or outsourced those to the local lead agency providers so they could address issues unique to the families in their area. Most agree this community-based care system has had positive results for Florida's children and families. However, as we saw from our panel discussions and workshops, there is more work to be done. This PCB makes several changes to improve the state's community-based care welfare system and seeks to address some of those, maybe not all of those, but a big portion of those issues that we workshop. It does so by requiring DCF to establish a foster information center to recruit new foster families and increase the number and to increase the support to our caregivers. It does also specifies how CBC should support kinship caregivers. It increases the transparency of the CBCs and the behavioral health management entities, spending and adding requirements about their conflicts of interest that may occur. It allows DCF to work with local communities to develop an alternative plan to deliver child welfare services if DCF cannot contract with a CBC provider, allowing the establishment of multidisciplinary legal team representation programs to serve families in the dependency system so permanency can happen faster, describes the services provided by the Child Advocacy Centers and aligns state law to new requirements to the Family First Prevention Services Act so the state can maximize all available federal funding. The PCB also recognizes and allocates current law related the PCB also reorganizes and reallocates current law related to the Central Abuse Hotline. The bill also includes an animal control officer as someone who must disclose his or her name when reporting child abuse or neglect. Requires DCF to comply with new requirements related to reports of child sexual abuse and increases penalties for non-reporting by school personnel. All of the changes included in the bill today are important as they improve our child welfare system and allows us to continue to protect our children. That's a brief summary of the bill. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Altman. Are there any questions of the bill sponsor? Representative Roach, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Thank you, Chairman, for bringing the bill. Great bill. Look forward to supporting it. wondering if you would entertain the idea of at least having a discussion at some point in the future about trying to identify or put in place in the bill language to try to formulate a standard method of calculating a child case manager turnover, because I know that there's some differences in the way some of the CBCs are calculating child case manager turnover, which is has a dramatic impact on the amount of time a child is in the system. Thank you for your consideration.
You want to respond, Chair?
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent point. And there is provisions in this bill to do that. And after you look at it and digest it, if you have ideas that can improve it, I'm open to that. And it's you know, what the turnover does, it affects that continuity of care that is so incredibly important. We would like to ensure that we have some accountability there and we measure that continuity and we increase it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, there is an amendment. It's PCB CFS 21-01A1.
Yes.
Chair Altman, you're recognized to present your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That bill brings that amendment, which deletes some language, brings our bill into conformity with the Senate bill, which is addresses pay of the CBCs and other organizations working with them by requiring them to publish them.
Are there any questions on the amendment? Any questions? Okay, we have no public testimony on the amendment. Is there debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Chair, you are recognized to close.
I waive close.
On the amendment.
I waive close.
Okay, I'm going to ask without objection. We will show that the amendment is accepted, adopted. Okay? So there is no public testimony on the bill. So now we're on debate on the bill. Seeing no debate on the bill, you're recognized, Chair, to close.
I just want to thank the committee for their hard work this session and participating and working with the stakeholders that are presented before us. Also, as this committee bill moves through the process, I really look for their input and advice. It is a committee bill. There's no self-pride of ownership here, so please let me know if you have any issues or input or improvements that you may be able to offer. I also encourage you amongst your fellow representatives and senators that you know to help advocate for us on this bill.
Okay, so Aaron, we're going to ask you to please call the roll on PCB CFS 2101, and we're asking members to please talk directly into the mic. Call the roll, please.
Representatives Bartleman?
Yes.
Barrero?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Pacello?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fisher?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes.
Foster?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Roth?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Trebulsi?
Yes.
Ranking Member Valdez?
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Chair Altman?
Yes.
17 yeas and 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, by your vote, we will show that the bill is reported favorably as amended. And I turn the gavel back over to your chair, and I would recommend that you apologize to Representative Koster after the meeting.
I will do that, Mr. Chairman. Okay, that concludes our meeting. And Representative Fisher moves, we rise. And without objection, upon the motion of Representative Fisher, the meeting is now adjourned.